Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good morning, Diarrhea!
It's time to wake up. It's 5, and we're live.
Oh, is this thing on? I don't care. I want him to hear.
This is the pregame show, your early morning shot of sports on 95.7 The Game.
Come on!
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
Whoop, whoop.
Anna, that was a good one.
That was a really good one. Need it.
I mean, I am going to tell you that Tampa Bay Rays-Baltimore Orioles game was solid. Did you see the Rays came back?
Incredible.
Best team in baseball.
Absolutely.
I don't even know if they came back. I just saw it went 5-5. I saw it was, they were down 5-1, and then they came back 5-5, I think. So
I was a little preoccupied last night.
I was checking scores.
Mm-hmm.
But, wow, that cut off really abruptly. But we are actually going to be talking about the Warriors when they did get that W over the Clippers and... To be honest, it was actually reminiscent of last game because Steph got into foul trouble. KD got into foul trouble early. He was a little different. We'll get to him in a little bit. We'll get to Andrew Bogut and all that sort of stuff. But, I mean, with, what, 7.5 minutes left in the third quarter, they get up by a 31-point lead. And this time they actually kept it.
Yeah. Different type of deja vu. You get there, but a different ending.
I was feeling that. I was like, wow, they're literally about to go up by 31 again, and let alone they go up by 31. And luckily the Clippers, they couldn't come back.
I think it was Steve Kerr that said that Jaron Collins told him, hey, we're up 31 right now, by the way.
Yeah. Didn't need to be reminded of that.
Do not.
All right. So you can hit up the Chilton Auto Body text line at 95795. Hit up the phone line, 888-957-9570. What'd you see from last night? And were you happy with the performance? Did this make you forget about that embarrassing, historic loss in Game 2? Anna, initial thoughts on the game? What was your overall reaction when you were watching it?
The Warriors controlled this game. They took control from start to finish.
That they did.
They didn't let up. And that's been the big issue all year long. We've seen so many games where they started off strong, they've done well, and then they've let their foot off the gas and then let teams come back and either win it or get close. So this time they're like, nope, we're going to do it. We're stepping right on them. We're going to keep going forward. And Kevin Durant was just a madman on the court.
Yep. He came out firing.
Mm-hmm.
He was aggressive. He was making shots. And, I mean, just like this one.
KD turns, triple threat, jab, step of the right leg, comes back with a left-hand dribble to the middle, stops, ball knocked away, gets it back, spins, shoots, and hits! Durant! He's got 10!
I mean, he was off to an incredibly hot start, but Anna, do you want to know my favorite play of this game?
Of course I do.
Well, at least from Kevin Durant's perspective, it's mainly because the camera literally cut to a shot of Patrick Beverley's face after Kevin Durant did this. Take a listen.
Williams the ball on the right side. Can't argue with that. Blocked by Iguodala. He roofed him. Here comes Draymond Green. Hustles down the far side all the way up over Gallinari. No good. Tip on the rim. Good and a foul. Kevin Durant flying high and going off balance with a rebound bucket. He's got a chance for a three-point play.
They cut to a face of Patrick Beverley, who was dumbfounded. Has he killed the Patrick Beverley bug? Has he finally overcome that? Or is the only way to overcome that really just to start shooting in their face and let them know you're Kevin Durant?
Yeah, he already said yesterday, he goes, I'm Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
He already told everybody who he is, and he proved it last night. If you were living under a rock, you didn't know who Kevin Durant was, well, you were introduced to him last night. That's exactly who Kevin Durant is. It was a total mismatch against Patrick Beverley. The idea that Patrick Beverley was able to get to him in game two and kind of apparently get in his head, everybody was saying, was just astonishing. And he showed that. He's like, look, I know who I am. You know who I am. I'm going to go out and show you what I can do.
Now, this was a good defensive beginning of the game for the Warriors. The other team, the other players on the team besides Kevin Durant, obviously he was taking a majority of the shots, but it was on the defensive side of the ball really that was affecting the game at the beginning, along with KD just knocking down shots, and they never really let their foot off the gas there. But what did you see from the Clippers? I mean, what was different? I could tell. You could see there was the Kerr was drawing up plays to block out this top locking effect that was talked about many a time after game two, which is pretty much just trying to stop their scorers from getting out to the 3-point line. And Kerr was able to combat that. But did you see the Clippers try that strategy at all? Did you see them really play the same type of defense that they've been playing against the Warriors, or did they just kind of break down?
They did the same thing that they were doing in game two, but the difference was the Warriors adjusted to them and they changed their game to what they were supposed to be playing. And the Clippers, this is why the Warriors are the favorites. This is why they're the number one seed in the West, because of how they play and what they do. And the Clippers were not able to adjust to them. And you could see that the rotations had worked for the Warriors. The Warriors, the big thing, they started out strong. They shot 70% from the field in the first quarter. So they came out strong and the Clippers were not able to slow them down.
Klay Thompson, he came out there and he scored a couple of threes. Draymond Green, he wasn't scoring all that much, but he was getting it done on the defensive end. Have you ever felt worse for a rookie in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander because he has Draymond Green covering him on the perimeter constantly? And I feel kind of bad for that guy.
I see that. I see that because Draymond's right in your face.
Yeah.
Draymond's right there. And you can there's a reason why we say that Draymond Green is one of those players that everybody hates. You love him when he's on your team and you hate him when he's not on your team. And he was right in his face and it made a difference for the evening. The other thing that I found interesting was it looked like Klay in the beginning looked a little frustrated, if you notice. He looked a little frustrated because his shots weren't coming in, and then all of a sudden he started getting them down and it started working out. So it's nice to see that Klay started to show up a little bit.
Yeah, he only had like three-point shot attempts in the game, but he knocked down both of them, which is important. Mm-hmm. You want to hear a weird stat about Klay?
Yeah,
that's kind of going to fall by the wayside. He grabbed 2 rebounds. He now has 406 career postseason rebounds, passing Rick Barry for 8th place on the Warriors' all-time playoff rebounds
list.
Look
at that. Look at that. Go Klay.
Klay getting it done on the glass. So feel free to hit up the Chilton Auto Body text line at 95795 from the 510. When they play like last night, like Shaq said, they are unstoppable.
Yeah.
I mean, is there really anything anyone can do when the team's just executing? That's what I saw last night, starting out in the game. Not only, I mean, obviously KD was the talk, you know. Yeah. It was him against Patrick Beverley. Is Patrick Beverley in his head? Not only was he knocking down shots, but the team was just executing on every end of the floor. Durant was getting open at any time. He was getting his own shots. He was creating his own shots. Bogut was setting screens at the top of the key. We'll get into Bogut's performance a little
have to
later.
Get into his
also, we should get into KD's technical foul. Also,
oh goodness, we definitely do.
You know what?
On
right
one.
Now, we'll get into it a little later. But right now, initially, that's going to get rescinded, right?
I would think so. If that doesn't get rescinded, there should be some changes made because this is his third technical foul. There's 7 before he gets suspended. He'll get suspended once he hits the 7th one. So this is a big concern right now. This is game 3 of the playoffs. You know, you have to go through the rest of the rounds and
3 technicals already. Yeah, 3 technicals.
That's a lot.
And you need 7 if you're going to get suspended, and I forgot what the rules are after that. It's not like
one or two or something.
Yeah, I think it's like you get 1 or 2. I think it's 2 technicals and then you get suspended again for another game. So he doesn't have many to play with right now, and it should be rescinded 100%.
Somebody else the Clippers had an issue with was Kevon Looney last night. Kevon Looney, as soon as he showed up, he was 4-for-4 early in the game in the first quarter. He ended up going 5-for-7. So the Clippers actually kind of ignored him early on because they were too busy, trying to take care of KD and Steph.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin Durant had that you thought he was just trying to take every single shot at the beginning because he was trying to make a little bit of a statement.
Mm-hmm.
But then you saw that pass to Kevon Looney on the cutting dunk. Then you realize, oh, yeah, KD's just in this. He's in this for the team. And they talked about this, actually. Steve Kerr did. And he said that Durant had a different mindset.
He had a different mindset tonight than he had the other night, and set a tone right away. And our guys loved it. His teammates were excited about the way he started the game, and I think that was infectious and carried over to our defense, too. I thought our defense was fantastic tonight.
Now, what's interesting about that is he said that he straight up had a different mindset, but Kevin Durant said after the game that the coach was actually the one getting him all these shots.
I think coach called a couple more plays for me to start the game, and, you know, I think, you know, doing that kind of set the tone, you know, just putting pressure on the defense through post-ups, through dribble handoffs, and I think that was something that we talked about this morning, just consciously, just you know, with the way they play, just coming off a lot of Andrew Bucking screens and, you know, sitting in the post. And if they double, guys are moving. We're just more patient tonight, you know, to sum it up.
Now, Kevin Durant ended up putting up 23 shots for 32 points, or rather 38 points, with a plus 32 on the night.
Isn't it funny how Kerr said yesterday that he needs to shoot about 20 to 30 more shots, you know, 20 to 30 shots. He shot 23. Everybody was making a big deal. Oh, you know, Katie says he doesn't need to shoot that many, but Kerr says he does. Is there animosity there? No, obviously not. Look what happens. Drew up plays that worked perfectly for Kevin Durant, and Kevin Durant went out there. He shot 23 times, and he was very effective out there.
Do you think it would be more mindset, though, or are we all going to blame it on the coaching? Because I do think that last game, I'm sure Kerr did draw up plays for him, and KD just felt like he had Patrick Beverley or Landry Shamet on him and felt the need to pass. But do you think it was more of a mindset thing, or was it just a little bit of a mix of both?
I think it was a mix of both, because also don't forget in the last game, that's when you had Boogie going down. There was changes in the rotations with going into foul trouble early. Now they were kind of prepared for it. Okay, if we get into foul trouble early, this is where we're going to go. Where I've kind of felt like in game two, they were kind of trying to, you know, pull different directions, try to figure out what's going to work best, and they figured it out, and that's where they were able to adjust.
It was interesting after the game, too. I don't have the sound of this specifically, but Kerr talked about he will leave KD in the game even though he has...
Yes, I see.
Even though he's in foul trouble, whereas Steph Curry, he's not exactly going to leave Steph in the game. What was that about? I don't get that.
I don't know either, honestly. I mean, you see Steph constantly on the bike trying to stay warm, kind of. I think it was Jim Barnett who said he was doing his best at Tour de France impersonation out there, just trying to get ready. He's trying to stay warm. So maybe he's more concerned. I don't know. I honestly don't know why Steph Curry, he wouldn't keep him in, but KD, he will.
I think that Coach Kerr has seen that Steph, at times, especially when he's the fouls that were called on him were terrible, by
the
way.
Completely.
I mean, these ticky-tack fouls left and right. I love that term, ticky-tack fouls. But it's true, because it's exactly how it sounds. Like, he's just reaching out as a player's trying to drive into the lane. I forgot which one specifically. But he just sticks his arm out, barely even touches the guy. Then he gets called for a foul. Nothing really he could do there. I think he could just sense that Steph was getting frustrated, and when Steph's frustrated, he's not going to be knocking down threes like he normally does. That's one thing we've noticed from Steph, is when he's in a rhythm, then that's when, you know, and he's cocky, that's when he's knocking down shots. But when his body language isn't there, he's frustrated with the refs. Probably not a smart idea to even keep him in there, whereas KD, he can sometimes overcome that.
Yeah, and this is actually going to be a concern down the road. If you think about Steph in foul trouble, how, you know, it did change his rhythm. He wasn't in a rhythm early, but then he did start to cool down. Is this something that we're going to see later on? Our team's going to go more after Steph, trying to get him into foul trouble, because they know that if they get him in foul trouble, he'll cool down a little bit?
You know what? We'll get into this on the other side, because I want to talk about that. I feel like this is the Clippers' only strategy, but we'll also get into Bogut. We're going to continue to talk about that technical, because Scott Foster is already the enemy of the NBA, not just the Bay Area, but the entirety of the NBA.
It's been a while that way.
I literally looked up sound yesterday. Like, I just searched up Scott Foster in our sound database, and I found, like, three things on him. And it was all from the middle of the season last year from Rockets players. I remember that. The Rockets, I forgot who they played against, but James Harden and Chris Paul came out and said Scott Foster should not even be reffing in this league. And we saw why they say things like that, especially last night. But we'll get into all that coming up here on the pregame show on 95.7 The Game with Steven and Anna.
Mm-hmm.
Now, back to the pregame show on 95.7 The Game. Here's Stephen Langford and Anna Kagarakis.
Pregame show is presented by Golden State Lumber. Join Golden State Lumber for golden mornings at the Building Bar for a coffee, meet, and greet with their product experts. Visit goldenstatelumber.com for dates and more information. I mean, we're sitting here talking about the Warriors win. What else do you want us to talk about?
We could also talk about congratulations to the Sharks. 5-2 win.
That's
over the Golden Knights.
That's going to be the motto. Warriors in 5, Sharks in 7. That's what we're looking for.
There we go. And congratulations to Chris Davis with the extension with the A's. As Susan Slusser says, it is like $16.75 million a year.
Yeah. Two-year deal is good for Chris Davis because, look, I'm in the camp that he's one of the more underrated power hitters that we've seen, especially in this era. I mean, the Brewers didn't have anything for him, but for 2 years, locking him up like that, that's a perfect time because you don't know how long he can keep up this .247 average with 45-plus home runs a season statistic. I don't know how long that can last, and I think 2 years is going to be perfect for him, and they'll see where he's at after those 2 years.
I can go get my kids their Chris Davis shirts and everything.
Yeah.
So it should be good.
Yeah, finally. You can actually buy a jersey with confidence knowing that someone's going to be there, a player's actually going to be there.
Can I read you a text on the text line?
100%.
All right, from the Chilton Autobody text line from the 408. Hey, good morning, guys. The Karma, they were up 31 again, talking about the Clippers and or the Warriors and Clippers game last night. And the Clippers shirt said, "We believe, LOL, trolling gone wrong." If you didn't see the shirts, I didn't get to see them, but I heard Steiny and Guru talking about them yesterday. And I guess the "We Believe" shirts that the Clipper fans are wearing, the E and the L were a 31.
Huh.
Very creative, mind you, but I don't know how I felt about that. Kind of like, don't try to... I know what you're trying to do, trying to upset the one seed, kind of like the Warriors did, but... Yeah.
We just need to let the Clipper fans have their little 15 seconds of fame.
Yeah.
Because that's this series. I mean, yesterday showed, last night showed, the series is not, it's not a good one in general. overall, I'm just watching these playoffs. I want to get to Andrew Bogut real quick. But overall, these NBA playoffs, these games have not been all that great as I've been watching them. The Sixers and Nets has probably had the most intriguing series. Now, that Celtics-Pacers game was for sure like a top of the list in terms of the playoffs that have been played so far. But I'm just – the second round can't come soon enough because in the NBA, it's not like the NHL where you got the Tampa Bay Lightning getting swept after having the best regular season, one of the best regular seasons in NHL history. It's not like that. This is – these teams are dominating each other.
I think you're seeing great performances from individual players right now. You obviously see my favorite, Giannis Antetokounmpo, what he's been doing with the Bucks. I mean, the Bucks have been dominating, but that's because, you know, Giannis has been doing also so spectacular, this whole their whole team. Also, James Harden, what he's been doing with the Rockets. So you have some... You may have teams that are dominating, and they may not have intriguing series, but you have intriguing performances.
Yeah, I mean, these... But back to those "We Believe" shirts; those are stupid.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm saying that as a Warrior fan out here, and we're obviously in the Bay Area. But it's one game.
Yeah,
and last night especially, they showed just that this team doesn't belong on the court with the Warriors, in my opinion. And these starters that they got going on are 1-for-5 from Landry Shamet, 1-for-7 from Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, 2-for-5 from Patrick Beverley, 2-for-13 from Danilo Gallinari. The only one who performed was Avika Zubats, who finally has actually scored some points. This team, it's no wonder they're the 8th seed.
Yeah, I completely see that.
But last night from Bogut, what'd you see? Now that Cousins had the injury, Bogut got the start, which was kind of a surprise to everyone. He ended up having 25 minutes in this game, which is more than his average. He's only averaging 10 or 11 this season since he got on the team. So what'd you see from Bogut last night?
I think he proved his value last night.
Yeah.
He completely proved his value. He proved his worth. 14 rebounds, 8 points, 5 assists, 20 in 25 minutes. He grabbed double-digit rebounds in a postseason game for the first time since grabbing 14 May 26, 2016 against Oklahoma City. Just the idea is what he's done. And, you know, the last time I remember seeing him in the NBA prior to just now with the Warriors was with that Cavalier team for, like, what, one game?
It was about 50, 54 minutes?
Yeah, something like that before he had the injury.
What was it? No, 54 seconds. Oh, 54
seconds.
Why'd I say,
like 54
why'd
minutes?
I say minutes?
Yeah. Yeah. So real, and you look like he was done. He was going to be, you know, out of the league forever. He let's, you know, go into retirement. And then he goes to Australia. He becomes the MVP of the NBL out there. And he comes back looking lighter. And a lot of people are saying he's actually kind of has a sunnier disposition.
A sunnier disposition?
Yeah, not so grumpy.
Well, he did come out and say that the Lakers kind of screwed him over and said that they were going to give him a contract, and they didn't.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of left him with a bad taste in his mouth. And he also left the NBA not on good terms. He wasn't talking nice about the NBA and how things are run. So I think we all kind of overblew it, as he stated when he got here. But at the same time, the departure of Andrew Bogut from the NBA and their little relationship, it was fractured.
Well, the other thing is, don't forget that when he left the Warriors, it was basically in order to bring in KD. So you have that storyline as well, where it's like, okay, will these two get along? Because we said, so long, Bogut, thank you for all your hard work here, but we got to bring in somebody else. You got to bring in KD.
Right.
And you wonder how those two would work. And I don't know, does it look like KD looks better playing with Andrew Bogut than with DeMarcus Cousins?
Not necessarily. I wouldn't say so. I think Andrew Bogut and DeMarcus are playing relatively the same role, except they're putting DeMarcus in the post way more. They were starting him off in the post way more and just going to him right away, going right at the center. They weren't doing that with Bogut so much last night. They had Bogut at the top of the key setting screens. That's what made him and Kevin Durant work so well together. But at the same time, I don't want to necessarily say that KD and DeMarcus work, or KD and Bogut rather, work better than him and DeMarcus. I can't really say that definitively.
Right.
Although I can say that after about a month and a half of being on this team, they both are in sync for sure.
Yeah, they definitely are. So it's actually fun to see what they're doing out there. And I'm just kind of happy to see Bogut with this team and working really well.
Well, speaking of which, Kevin Durant talked about Bogut.
He's just a smart basketball player, man. Just, you know, obviously being here and knowing the system helps. But, you know, I think he could play that way anywhere. You know, just directing the offense when he needs to, rebounding, being in the right spots, his talking, his energy. Just everything since he's been here been top of the line, you know, just especially his talk, you know, how he's just guided guys out there every possession is something we definitely needed.
He ended up finishing the night with 8 points, with 14 total rebounds and 5 assists. So Bogut was getting it done not only on the glass, but he was getting it done on the floor as well.
Yeah, so excited to see him out there. It almost, you know, I think I forgot who it was to say, but somebody was saying how he actually might be better.
It might be one head coach. Steve Kerr.
So, no, we reminded the guys at halftime, and I don't even think we needed to, but, you know, it's such a long game. That's the thing when you play or coach in the NBA or as a fan sit through a six-minute timeout. I mean, it's a long haul. There's plenty of time for a lot of wild swings, and you just have to stay locked in.
Well, that cut was labeled wrong.
That was wrong.
So
I know what you're trying to go with now.
Yeah, no, Steve Kerr ended
you're
up
right.
saying
it
that this version of Andrew Bogut could be better than the one that they had in the past. Do you believe that that's true?
I can see that. I can see that he's got a little spring in his step. And I think I remember him saying that he actually attributed also to him having kids because his life has changed and just everything. His mindset's different. So he kind of looks at things differently, which I could understand because the way you approach things in life is completely different before you have kids and after. And it changes your decisions and how you look at things. So I could kind of see that.
I mean, we've seen that with both Steph and Draymond.
Yeah.
Both having children as they were on the Warriors roster. But Klay Thompson is one of the few originals that hasn't exactly gone that path yet.
Not yet. Not yet.
Do you think Klay Thompson will have a kid by the time he's done with basketball?
I could see. Yeah, yeah. I think so. I'd like to see how that turns out. You know what? That kid's going to be an entertaining child too.
100%. And he's gonna have Rocco. So
oh my gosh.
I'm kind of jealous.
You know, that's kind of his kid right now.
It
Rocco.
Is.
He has
yeah,
to take
that's
care
true.
Rocco.
That's true.
Rocco is kind of his mindset right now.
That's true.
But also Andrew Bogut, also he is lighter. Obviously, I think it was Ray Ratter that was talking yesterday about how the Australian League is basically the same amount of time as the playoffs, basically now here for And so that type of idea that, you know, obviously Andrew Bogut was playing a full season with the Warriors. You get 100%. A little more tired. So there is a difference when it comes to stamina and things like that.
I was literally about to bring that up. What? The next game's Sunday?
Yeah.
This is very annoying. Because I'm thinking, like, when I was watching it, this game last night with my brother, and we're seeing the Nuggets and the Spurs, and they're playing, and he's asking what the series is at, because when you're watching on the corner of the screen, they didn't put the series record.
Right, they just put the score.
And I'm also, like, I'm so mixed up with NHL playoffs also.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I think I'm pretty sure they're 1-1. They could be 2-1. It felt like they played more
you
games than
so.
Just two. But right now, two through Sunday, it is like the Australian League, just playing once or twice a week.
Isn't it funny how they've spread these games out so much, but still in a way you had those games on pretty much at the same time?
Yeah.
I mean, it overlapped, not the entire time, but it overlapped a little bit.
From the 408 on the Chilton Autobody text line, when the hell did Looney get a mid-range shot? Love it.
I know.
Kevin, you know what? I'm not even going to trust any of the sound right now because it seems to be mislabeled.
Tisk, tisk.
No, that's my fault. I should have checked beforehand, but... you know, Kevin Durant talked about that. He talked about how Looney is a smart player. He's always been a smart player. But they also have told him to let it loose a little bit because this season he's been working on that mid-range game. You've been seeing that. He's the most efficient scorer the Warriors have right now. You put him on the floor, especially in that bench role. We understand now why Kerr started Bogut. Because
yeah, you completely trust him on that.
Looney's shooting 83% from the field, I think. He's like 14 for 16. So... they just told him to cut it loose. I think that Looney's probably always had this mid-range shot, and he's just kind of been a little timid to use it.
Yeah, the whole idea is if it's broke, don't fix it. It's been working. Him coming off the bench, he's done a great job with it. Like you said, he's been incredibly efficient. 10 points, second straight game, scoring in double figures. Great time to do it. The last game in game two, he had 19 points, his career high in the playoffs. So it's great to see what he's done and how he has been developing.
Shout out Whitey Duvall from 8 Crazy Nights. He sang a song about technical fouls, and Stephen Langford and Anna Kagarakis are in with you, and we're going to talk about the technical fouls that
Whitey.
Were given for Sean Livingston.
Yeah, I that was dumbfounding to me. Really, of all guys, that was not somebody I was going to pick to get a next technical foul.
Sean Livingston got a technical.
Wrong.
Never thought I would say those words. Come on back with Stephen and Anna on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to the pregame show on 95.7 The Game, presented by Golden State Lumber. Here's Stephen Langford and Anna Kagarakis.
Pregame show is presented by Golden State Lumber. Join Golden State Lumber for Golden Mornings at the Building Bar for a coffee meet and greet with their product experts. Visit GoldenStateLumber.com for dates and more information. I mean, we're just talking about the Warriors. They ended up getting that big win. They came back after that embarrassingly historic game two. 31 points with 7.5 minutes left in the third quarter last night, and it wasn't the same. They kept their foot on the gas. KD came out aggressive, shot 23 shots. They turned the ball over less.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was a big thing.
Yeah, they did, and I think that was huge. And then also having Kevin Durant out there. Shout out to Anthony Slater for one of my favorite nicknames, the Slim Reaper.
The Slim Reaper.
I love that nickname.
Slater's been with him since he was in OKC, so
that's
Slater
right.
Knows him real well.
Yeah, so he's knows him and what he's all about. But great performance from KD last night. 38 points, 7 assists, 4 rebounds, 1 block and a steal. His 56th career 30-point playoff game. Just thinking about that and what he's done. He's such a phenomenal player.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't surprise me, but yet I sometimes feel like, wow, yeah, we take it for granted what we have.
I mean, we've always taken it for granted. Everyone does. Yeah. We overreact to game two. And Steph Curry said after the game, it's just one game.
Yeah.
And it really is just a one game mindset. No matter how bad it was, I was under the belief that it can't get any worse from here.
Do you see them actually letting go of another game down the road?
Well, down the road, like later on in
yeah,
the playoffs or later in this series?
Both. I personally don't see it at all in this series. I think they're going to just full throttle to finish it up.
This series, it's not happening. I don't think that, to be honest, I don't think if they're, I mean, the Rockets are just destroying the Jazz right now. So if the Warriors do end up winning, it's going to be them against the Rockets. I don't think the Rockets are going to give them even a chance to let their foot off the gas pedal. I think that's going to be an unbelievable series, especially going forward. I didn't think that at first in the regular season in the middle of it, before the Rockets just went on this tear and James Harden started being otherworldly and actually being a respectable player and getting his points in a respectable way. I don't think they're even going to have a chance to really let their foot off the gas pedal or anything like that. And I don't know if it's gonna, they're going to have another 31-point lead going into the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I see against the Rockets, like if they go up against the Rockets in the next round, I could see them just full throttle, 100%, totally committed. The one time I would potentially see it is maybe going into the Western Conference Finals, because if they get into, you know, if they pass, say it does happen where they play the Rockets, they beat the Rockets, they go to the Western Conference Finals, there's going to be a little bit of, you know, kind of, I wouldn't say exhaustion, but, you know, it's going to wear them a little bit down in a series like that, potentially. And then because of that heightened awareness for that game, I could see them almost, you know, kind of letting go of one of the games in the Western Conference Finals, something like that.
So last night, you know how many free throw attempts the Warriors had?
How many?
They had 18 total. You know how many the Clippers had?
How many?
34 total.
Wow.
So, doing the math quickly, that's only 52 free throw attempts. Compare that to 76 from the last game.
Huge difference.
But there was a technical given out.
Two
of them, but one of them was really egregious. The first one was to Sean Livingston, which was crazy.
Yeah, shocking.
Is that the one player you would expect least to get a technical?
100%. I was trying to go down the list thinking, okay, who is the least likely? Yeah, it'd be him. He just seemed so cool and collected, and for Sean Livingston to get a technical was just weird. It was just strange, like the last person I would have thought of.
Let me look up Klay Thompson's technical fouls right now, because I would argue that I think Klay would be least likely to get attacked. Dude, he doesn't yell. He's not boisterous or loud. He doesn't give the refs any sort of reason to give him a technical, if I can look up the stats. But I think Klay versus Sean before last night, which one's a race to the first technical? I don't know which one I'd take, because they're both so like, they're such respected players. They're well-respected players. But on the other side, though, Durant and Jermichael Green, I don't know what this was. Let's play the highlight. I want to hear what Tim Roy, how this call went over.
Jermichael Green saying flop. Bogut comes in, says, KD, we need you. Bogut looks over. Scott Durant goes, I got this. He goes, I got this. You don't need to come over here. I got this. And now the double technical. Jason Phillips called the double technical. And that's the third technical on Kevin Durant. They're just talking.
Has to get rescinded.
I mean, seriously, they're jawing at each other. They're talking. What could have been said that would have warranted a technical? I honestly don't know. And what happened to letting them play?
This reminds me of the lady with the sunglasses in Oakland who called the police on people having a barbecue.
Right.
You know, you're just, this dude is seeing these two guys somehow. What, does he think they're going to fight? Does he think they're going to throw fists? He just gave him a double tech. I think what was funny, I've never really seen this before, but they both were kind of together on their technical foul issues with him. Like they were jawing about the game, talking whatever mess, just, you know, whatever basketball players do. They talk trash. That's how it goes. I mean, but to see how surprised they both were at the same time, you could tell instantly that they did nothing wrong, and you know that for a fact, and it has to be rescinded for both of them.
Yeah.
Three technicals already? You don't want Kevin Durant getting seven technicals and possibly getting suspended one game. I mean, it's only one game, but at the same time, we saw when Draymond got suspended, and it was at the worst time possible. So this is just, it's ridiculous. You can't let any of these refs, whoever's out there, just try and exude their power on these guys. That's not what reffing is about. It's supposed to be keeping a clean game and trying to be fair and balanced on both sides, but that's not fair and balanced on any side, in any arena, in any sport.
Not at all. And if this is a preventative move to make sure they don't fight with each other, that's horse doo-doo, basically. That's just ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. It should be rescinded. If it's not, I mean, that's just completely wrong to have the idea that he is already at three and he's almost halfway, you know, half would be, would it be halfway, but still
nearly
the idea,
halfway.
I mean, nearly halfway to get potentially suspended.
Why didn't Scott Foster do anything about it? Let's listen to the call again. I want to listen to the ref's name that he called out, because it wasn't Scott Foster like originally everyone had thought.
It's Michael Green saying flop. Bogut comes in, says, KD, we need you. Bogut looks over. Scott Dwardowski goes, I got this. He goes, I got this. You don't need to come over here. I got this. And now the double technical. Jason Phillips called the double technical. And that's the third technical on Kevin Durant. They're just talking. They're just talking.
They're just talking. That's it.
I do wonder what Dibs would think, because I do want to see if Scott Foster, who was the chief of the crew chief for the refs that game, I want to see if he could do anything about that, because anyone could see from the naked eye that that wasn't supposed to be a technical. There wasn't anything going on. There wasn't any malicious attacks. There wasn't any violence. There wasn't, I mean, it was just little talking. I don't get it. It's, what did he see? Like, did he think that them two were going to start throwing hands? Like, I don't get it.
They looked like they were kind of smiling, too. They were smiling. It's kind of part of the game. A mental part of the game is getting in other guys' heads and getting out there. I mean, when you play street basketball growing up and just playing on the courts, it's just, are we watching out for what we're saying? Excuse me, sir. Please move over. Please. Pardon. No. Would you pass me the ball, please?
What is that?
I don't know.
What is that, like your snobby accent?
Yes,
is that like the snob accent?
My snobbery.
There you go.
At its finest.
But with these two fouls, though, these two technicals, one to Sean Livingston and the other to KD, do you see that the Clippers, it feels like their only goal right now is to get the best players into foul trouble? I don't see anything else that they're really trying on defense. It feels like they have given up at even attempting to stop anything from going on, to stop them from getting open shots, to stop them from getting buckets in transition after good defense. They're not doing any of that. It seems like all they're doing is trying to draw fouls and get guys like Steph out of the game in the second half.
It's actually brilliant of the Clippers, in all honesty, to mess up the Warriors' flow, to get into their heads that way, to get them into foul trouble and change it up. I think that's actually a brilliant move by the Clippers, and I am worried down the road to see if another team is going to take advantage of that.
From the 831, if you've never worn the stripes, you have no idea what officiating is about.
I did it in the YMCA. I reffed, actually, kids' basketball. Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
How'd that go?
It was all right. I mean, it was a little
kid. Did you get
kids.
Any fans arguing with you?
I didn't have anybody tell me to swallow the whistle.
How old were the kids?
Well, they were little. They were like seven, eight years old.
Any technicals given out?
No, nobody on that. I didn't have to worry about that. They're pretty good, you know, kind of.
I umpired when I was 13 years old, and I...
How was that?
I was a volunteer umpire. I did it because my dad does it, and I thought it would be a cool thing to get into. I did it for 3 games. In the first one, I made a mistake. It was on the... Obviously, an umpire being in baseball, not in basketball. I've never donned the stripes on the basketball court. But being in baseball, I was made a call. The runner was inside the baseline. He bunted it, and he was inside the baseline. But the catcher, who threw the ball, ended up hitting the base runner in the back. And when you're inside the line, you hit the base runner in the back. That means it's interference on the runner. Runner's out. Then the parents took exception to that, and I was 13 years old. I ended up just quitting after that because these parents are taking this a little
parents
too
are terrible.
They're taking
that,
this a little too seriously. Yeah. One of the guys, he looked like he was on steroids, threw a Gatorade bottle as hard as he could at the fence, and he clearly didn't know anything. So I said to him,
a 13-year-old kid,
and I said to him, "Hey, if you've never donned the stripes, don't come talking to me, man."
You said that?
No, I did not.
I know.
I did not.
Didn't. 13 years old. You're probably like, please, sir.
I made the crew chief. I made the Scott Foster of our umpire group come out and let that parent know. Yeah, I mean, hey, I made the right call.
Mm-hmm.
But
I mean, look, don't get me wrong. The refs are always going to be the bad guy. There's always going to be some issue with the refs. Oh, that was a terrible call. That was it. And there's times it's not warranted. Obviously, that's just you get mad about something as a fan. But there are times that you sit there and you question, what decisions are they making?
Quite frankly, we wouldn't be coming in here talking about the refs at all, because in the end, the Warriors ended up getting the win, and they it didn't really affect the game. Last game, I think it certainly affected because it affected the tempo and the flow and how both teams were running. But this game, they really, besides this, it was fine. It's just this type of tech is the type of thing that makes you talk about them the next day when they really shouldn't be talked about.
Yeah, no, it shouldn't be talked about. And there are times, like we said, game two, people are trying to blame it on the refs. You could not blame it on the refs, the complete meltdown from the Warriors. That was not the refs. I understand that it messes up the flow when it comes to the foul line and things like that, but that was the Warriors just letting it slip away from them.
You can mention that the refs did end up making, you know, a couple of bad calls or whatever, especially the ones on Steph. But for the most part, they shouldn't be a talking point. But when you give off a tech like this, I mean, what are you going to do? What are you going to do?
Is there a reason why somebody from the 510 texts in Paul Reiser and Helen Hunt mad about you? Great show. I used to like that show.
Mad about you? I don't know.
Like that show. Were you texting the wrong show?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Paul Reiser? I don't know. From the 925 on the Chilton Auto Body text line, they're baiting the Warriors. Yeah, they're trying to, and Patrick Beverly after the game was proud. He said that one of the positives that he took away from this game was that they got Steph out in the second half, and he seemed proud of that. And that's what made me think on the way in, damn, they really don't have a defensive strategy except, like, just foul and hope that they get him out of the game.
Yeah, because Steph Curry, I mean, if he had his pull-up jumper is completely demoralizing to a team.
Yeah.
When he is on, when he is hot, there is no stopping him. And the only way they were able to stop him was to get him out of rhythm by getting him into foul trouble.
So we talked about this earlier, but I want to reiterate it again. Kevin Durant also got into foul trouble early, but they took out Steph in the second half. And Steve Kerr said after the game that He has way more faith in keeping KD in the game rather than Steph. Do you think that it's just purely from a standpoint of, hey, whenever Steph gets into foul trouble, he gets out of the rhythm and it's proven? Or, I mean, does he just trust KD to score more, just more efficiently?
You know, I honestly can't figure out the reasoning why behind it, because when he pulled him out, he still cooled down. He's still out of rhythm basically afterwards, because he did get into foul trouble. If you kept him in, he might have stayed hot, but then again, would he have fouled out? I don't know. Maybe it's a different approach in how these teams go after both of them and whether or not they're more likely to foul out. So maybe it's more that Steph is more likely to foul out than KD.
Steph ended up with 21 points on the night, 4 for 6, so from the three-point line. So it's not like it's not like he should have even put him back in. I mean, at that point, when he's out and you knew he was just going to be sitting on the bike the entire time, at that point, you're just like, no point in bringing him in.
Yeah.
There's no reason to, because it's Steph. You don't want to risk any sort of injury that's already happened. I mean, in the fourth quarter, you even saw Jacob Evans putting up shots last night. That's the kind. I don't think we're going to see another kind of game in this in these playoffs, especially one where they have a 30-point lead going into the fourth quarter.
No, if they do that, that's just I'll be dumbstruck. I'm awestruck by this, actually. So I don't think they'll ever get to that. I could see them letting a game slip away from them, but not to that magnitude. But what do you expect for this next game on Sunday?
For the next game on Sunday, they're going to come out firing just like normal. I don't expect KD, though, to take the first whatever 5-6 shots or whatever it was, because he's proven, like, hey, I can go out there and score. And he's made the statement to the fans and to any of the doubters out there who are talking about comparing this whole situation to LeBron James and J.J. Barea. When LeBron was, I mean, nationally, he was known to be too scared to post up JJ in that finals. So I think it's just, I don't know if we're going to necessarily see KD come out with that aggression. I do think, though, that we are going to continue to see this defense thrive.
Yeah.
This defense has been unstoppable for them. Or rather, unstoppable. There's no other way to really put it, because you're seeing these guys, they're not making more than 3 field goals a game. Draymond's out there on the perimeter just blocking any shot that comes out from the corner three. Speaking of which, actually, let's play this sound, because I didn't get to this yet. But Draymond Green talked about the defense of this team.
You know, like I said before, it's playoff time, man. That's my role on this team, is to bring that intensity on the defensive side of the ball. And I am the leader on that side of the ball for this team. So we know if we're going to win that's we got to get stops. And, you know, we were doing that for probably like a game and a half, and then we kind of let go of the rope. So we wanted to come out and establish that from the beginning, and I knew that, you know, that falls on me to bring that intensity level and, you know, have everyone else follow.
Draymond, Clay, KD was blocking shots. Bogut sitting there in the post just blocking shots.
I like how it's hard to really go against the defense. Yeah, I like the fact that he takes the ownage of being the leader of the defense. To me, that's something that's kind of important, that he sits there and says, okay, it comes through me, it flows through me right now. And I could see him actually being a huge factor to seal the deal in this next game on Sunday.
How so?
I could just see him, because they're going to be still, the Clippers are still going to try to do their game where they go after KD, Steph. They're still going to try to do that, get into their heads, trying their same game to see what works, trying to kind of have that deja vu from game two. Obviously, I don't see it happening, but I think that you can see somebody like Draymond taking advantage and kind of being out there, and maybe, who knows, maybe you can get a triple-double out of him eventually. Kind of miss that.
Right?
Yeah.
We always want a 10-10-10 from Draymond. That's like classic Draymond, but he's had a lot of classic Draymond games this season.
He's had great games this season.
In that he will have like a stat line of 5 points with 9 rebounds along with 13 assists.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to go down when we look back on it as one of the more interesting players that we've had on this Warriors team, because naturally they're going to be known as this scoring team in the future. But we all know, especially now, that Draymond on the defensive side of the ball, he's been the backbone of this team for sure.
100%.
So one thing I really want to see from the Clippers, though, because I want to see this be competitive at least in some capacity. Yet last night it wasn't competitive at all, and I want to see some sort of competitive game. They need to get their starters going. Seems like they're just building their offense to get shots for the bench players with Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell again, who were in double-digit figures. Lou Williams definitely wasn't as lethal as he was in Game 2. He was actually the key, the defensive breakdown, and then Lou Williams just taking advantage of the pick and roll. That was the key in the second half of Game 2. They're still doing that, though, and you got Landry Shamet, who's the rookie, he's 1-for-5. You got Gilgeous Alexander, who's 1-for-7. Those guys are trying to get shots off. At the same time, their defense isn't letting them get shots up. And this Clippers team, it feels like they just give up on these guys instantly, and they just go immediately to their bench. So if they can get their starters going, I need to see that, because the starters haven't played any good basketball at all this series.
Yeah.
Especially for the Clippers.
Well, most of the season as well, their strength has been their bench, and they're still trying to go to that. So you may have had some great moments from some of their starters, but the backbone to this team are Williams and Harrell. And those two have been the backbone. There's a reason why the Clippers bench is actually, you know, they would average like 53 points during the season. So they have been the driving force of this team that actually got them to the playoffs.
Do you think Klay Thompson's performance, especially so far this series, and in the past, we've seen it in the finals, in clutch games, in games in which we need Klay to be lethal, you've seen him underperform. Maybe not on the defensive side of the ball, but offensively,
right,
when he's shooting. Do you think that these playoffs and these types of games are reasons that people don't put him up there as like a number one? Besides, there's a couple of people who are reading between the lines, and they say that, you know, Klay basically says himself that he's not a number one guy, but that's just because he's playing behind KD and Steph, and he has all these other scorers on his team. But do you think that his performance in these playoffs, or the underperformance of him in these playoffs, is the reason why people don't look at him as like that number one guy, and they don't think that he can get that max contract that he's so looking after?
I could see that. I could definitely see that. I also may be wondering, maybe he should skip a practice one day, because didn't that happen in a 60-point game where he skipped practice? Like overslept or something
like that?
No one
knew where he was.
Yeah, nobody knew, and then he showed up and just had a magnificent performance. So maybe we need a little something like that, change it up for him, because he is looking a little frustrated out there.
He's being efficient, you know, and he got 12 points last night, which is fine, and the Warriors are killing it, but going forward in the playoffs, it feels like you're going to need Klay to at least just be a sort of safety for this team when they aren't going to be hot. Because let's face it, they're not going to be hot every single game.
Right.
Steph and KD, there's going to be a game or two where they're both going to go cold, and we're going to need Klay to come up in the clutch. I mean, he's going to be a key going down the stretch for sure. It's the same with any of these guys on the bench as well. Andre Iguodala, by the way, we haven't really talked about him either.
Yeah.
The dude being healthy with that second unit, it's you can't really even speak on how important he is to the squad, because not only is Draymond the leader on the defense, but when Andre's out there, he's the leader on defense, and he's a big reason why they get buckets in transition, especially off good defense.
This is a reminder why all season long we're like, oh, you know, is he okay? How long is he going to last in this league when it comes to the regular season? But he is a whole – I mean, he is the definitive flip the switch. When it comes to anybody, that's who you look at. When it comes to the postseason, it is Andre Iguodala who flips the switch and gets into complete playoff mode.
Him and Lou Williams, they've been both playing against each other on separate teams or opposing teams, since they got to the Warriors and the Rockets, respectively. But did you know that, I mean, they played with the 76ers from Lou Williams was drafted in 05 and Andre Iguodala was drafted in 04. They were both there till 2012. I mean, how cool is that kind of when them two are playing against each other? We sort of forget that they're old friends pretty much.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. Those are kind of those games where you look back and say, okay, I know what you're all about. I know what you're like. But, you know, their lives have definitely changed since then.
You don't expect Lou Williams and Andre to kind of be the same age. Lou Williams,
I know.
You know, it's I don't know why Lou Williams just has that young look about him. And Andre looks like that kind of veteran. He has that veteran presence on the court. Lou Williams looks like a young scorer, which, I mean, these guys, Shamit and Gilgeous Alexander, should be.
Yeah, Lou Williams, I think the other day, was saying on TMZ Sports that he should be in the Hall of Fame. He should be in the NBA's Hall of Fame. So that should be an interesting thing. I got to look back on his numbers to see if he is. But he, you know, he's done a great job with his Clipper team.
That he has. All right, we got about 20 seconds left in the show. You got Jolo and Dibs coming up with John Dickinson at 6:30, Gary St. Jean at 8:30, and Tim Roy at 9:30. I'm excited to hear about Tim Roy.
Yeah.
Or hear from Tim Roy about these technical fouls, because, like you said, they are talking.
They are talking. That's all they were doing.
All right, Sunday is the next matchup for both the Warriors and the Sharks. Thank you for joining us. Jolo and Dibs are next.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.